Hello, interested in Freemasonry? Want to find out more? Then stay tuned in with Matt and Andy, who'll be discussing everything Freemasonry with guest speakers who delve into their own journey through the craft. Grab a beverage, pop your earbuds in, sit back and relax. Welcome to the Oxfordshire Light Blues Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the fourth episode of the Oxfordshire Light Blues Podcast. I am joined with Andy Proper, as always, and this session we've got Andrew Keach, Provincial Grand Charity Steward for the Province of Oxfordshire. Andy, do you want to just introduce yourself briefly?
Hi, Matt. Yeah, I'm Andy. I'm from Carfax Lodge 5723, currently the Senior Warden of the Lodge. And of course, I'm here again doing this podcast with you.
Cool. Andrew, I guess the first question to ask is, can you give the audience a bit of background? I mean, how did you get into Freemasonry? What's your journey been?
Well, thanks, Matt and Andy. And firstly, thanks very much for the invitation to join you with the Oxfordshire Light Blues. I've so far listened to the previous three podcasts, been very impressed, so I hope I'm not going to let anybody down. And to those of you listening, I hope this is interesting, obviously, but also, much more importantly, I hope it's informative in helping you understand a little bit about a provincial officer and what I do and what's involved and how it might help you plot your journeys in masonry. So in terms of how I came to be a mason, my dad was a mason. He joined sometime in his 40s, and fairly soon afterwards I found that as a family we were going to social events. There was a particular group of people that we seemed to interact with a lot. We went for Christmas dinners in a hall, which turned out to be a Masonic hall. So Christmas dinners, there were summer lunch parties, either at that hall in the gardens or in various people's houses, and a few other things. So I, as an early teenager, I guess, I was starting to meet people and as families. We were a family, they were a family. And as I got older and we were going to these social events, I kind of realized that it wasn't just a social event. I was actually liking the people that I was interacting with. And that's when I began to understand that this was to do with something called Freemasonry. And it was very much a case that I liked these people. I got on well with these people. I thought fundamentally they were good people. And as I got older and I asked my dad a little bit more about what was Freemasonry, and he started to tell me about the ritual and the charity and some of the more formal sides of it, I was still nonetheless left with that social element of thinking, this is great. So if I'm enjoying it, why wouldn't I want to get involved? And Dad always said that you can't join until you're 21. And apparently, I don't remember this, but apparently on my 21st birthday, I said to him, okay, I'm 21 now, let's have it. So I was at university in my final year up in Nottingham. And in October 1987, I caught the train wearing my interview suit, went down to London and was initiated in room 16 of the wonderful Freemasons Hall. And that's how my journey began.
Obviously, since being in the craft, what do you actually get out of Freemasonry yourself?
Well, I think that friendship that we're talking about is fundamental. But it's not the only thing by far. There is a huge, for me, sense of belonging and a sense of purpose. And as I've got more and more into Freemasonry over the years, I clearly can see the really, really wonderful things that we do as individual Masons, as lodges, as provinces. And I'm not trying to be corny because I am the provincial charity steward, but I've seen the wonderful works we do in charity for many, many years now. And That is another huge fundamental for me. So I've got the friendship, I've got the wonderful stuff we do. And, you know, I've always been a little bit of an amateur dramatic fan. And I like the ritual. So far, I've been okay at learning the ritual. And I think I had the advantage of learning it quite young, therefore it's stuck. It does undoubtedly get harder as you get older. So big chunks now are a little bit daunting, but stuff I learned 20 odd years ago, I've pretty much still got. So I've enjoyed doing some floor work as well. And that's what I really love, but it's just such a great organization to be part of. And something that Zoom can only partly compensate for when we're not actually able to sit in a temple, have a good meeting, and then have a great festive board afterwards.
And do you think Freemasonry's changed you as a person?
Gosh, I guess it must have done. Clearly, I don't know the kind of person I would have been had I not been a Freemason. But Freemasonry has always been there at the back of my mind. And, you know, look, I'm a perfectly imperfect human being. I've still managed to make mistakes. And by far, do I get everything right all the time? You know, I don't. But Freemasonry does help me to lead a better life, I believe.
So you've already referred to your lodge that you were initiated into. Out of interest, how did you become a Mason within Oxfordshire?
Well, that's a good question, Andy, and thanks for asking. My mother lodge was great, and I went through the chair aged 29 and then became treasurer, and it just seemed that I'd kind of done a lot in that lodge at a young age. But I was living in Bedford, and having a mother lodge in London was beginning to get quite difficult. And although I joined a chapter in Bedfordshire, I was also a regular guest at a lodge in Oxfordshire. And the reason for that is one of my hobbies outside of Freemasonry, and believe me, I'm not a professional Freemason, is church bell ringing, something I've done since I was a lad when my folks moved us next to a church. So my bedroom window overlooked a graveyard.
Interesting.
A tiny little hamlet with just 10 churches, 10 houses and the church. So if you didn't do something associated with the church, you probably had no friends and no social life, even as a young lad. So I was... Having become a Mason, some of my bell ringing friends introduced themselves as Freemasons and said, come and be a visitor at our lodge. It's called Clavis. We meet in Oxford, at the time, the old 333 Banbury Road. So I had a really nice experience of being one of those sort of semi-permanent guests, if you like. But inevitably, of course, I was always going to get a Form P thrust in my hand to join the lodge. And I stipulated just one condition. I said, let me go through the chapter chairs, get that out of the way, because it's quite a lot of work, and then I'll gladly join. And I more or less forgot about that statement, not completely, but more or less. And in my last chapter meeting coming out of the three chairs, was one of the Clavis guys there, and at the festive board, he came up to me with an envelope in his hand, and he said, there you go, you said you'd join when you were out of the chapter chairs, here's your form. So that was in 2006, I joined Clavis in Oxfordshire, and expecting it very much to be a backseat lodge, I thought, you know, I'll just sit on the back benches, maybe do the odd bit of ritual every now and again. Nah, that didn't work out. 6 months into the lodge, they made me secretary. I did that for 7 years, went through the chair of Clavis, which was great to go through a second lodge through the chair and do it somewhat differently to how I'd done it first time around. And you know, I think it was as a result of being secretary and trying to reposition some of the things within Clavis and just paying more attention to what was going on in the province that I must have unwittingly caught somebody's eye, and hence a few years later, I'm offered the role of provincial charity steward.
And you've mentioned a chapter, and you've been through the chairs and chapter. Are you in any other side orders or progressive orders?
I did. Many years ago, I joined Mark, but unfortunately, it didn't work out for me in that I was on a two-year waiting list to get into this particular Mark Lodge. And by the time I'd gone from saying yes to joining in those 2 years, I'd changed jobs to work in a heavy sales environment, recruitment. So my working hours were generally up to about 7:30 at night. So therefore, getting to a lodge meeting was pretty much impossible. I'd also had twins in that time. So I joined Mark, but sadly, it didn't work out for me. And it's one of those things that I may pick up at some point in the future. But more recently, I was given an invitation to join something called the Royal Order of Scotland. And after thinking about it, I have joined that. And it's a very full-on meeting where you have effectively a craft meeting and a chapter meeting of sorts at the same time, with a sort of tea break in between the two. So I'm very, very junior to that and still finding it a little bit bewildering. But again, hopefully something I'm going to grow into as the next stage.
Sounds like quite an interesting order.
It is. I mean, it's certainly very beautiful. If you like music, it's a very musical order. There's a lot of things played and sung and during the regular ceremony. But as I say, I think I've been to three or four meetings so far, and I've got a lot of learning to do there.
You're reminiscing your time as an entered apprentice.
Very much so.
Well, we're obviously here to discuss a bit more about your active provincial role within Oxfordshire. You're currently our charity steward. So I'd be interested to find out a bit more about that. Could you give me a bit more of an insight into the role and what it entails?
Well, to anybody that's interested in this, I hope this, as I said earlier, I hope this is useful. So provincial charity steward is it's quite a big role. I think there's a lot going on if you're just the provincial charity steward anyway. And we also, as a province, happen to be in festival. So that adds an extra nuance. And I'll explain what I mean by festival. So if we just stick to the basic parts of being a provincial charity steward, I kind of liken it a little bit to a Venn diagram. So apologies, that's my maths A levels coming out, and the accountant in me that still likes some numbers. And I guess there's three, possibly four circles in the Venn diagram that overlap. And therefore you can be interacting on any two, any three, possibly even any four of them, or all four indeed. So I suppose the first part of the role with these Venn diagrams is to say I'm effectively a focal point of contact for lodges, the MCF, standing for the Masonic Charitable Foundation, charities, and then individual Freemasons. And I get lots and lots and lots of questions about, for example, from an individual or a lodge, they might want to know, how do I donate money to X? Or even, how much money have I already donated? Because there's now some fairly sophisticated records at the MCF. So some questions are around, how do people give money to charity? The MCF, Masonic Charitable Foundation, headquartered in London, really beginning to become a very switched on organisation in terms of how much support they give. So there's always a lot of information being communicated to keep us abreast of what's happening in the charity world. And then it's my job to disseminate that to the lodges. And then the lodges themselves, you know, we've got that. It might be that I'm interacting with a lodge charity steward, but equally I sometimes find it's the lodge secretary that wants to know something, or the lodge treasurer, or the worshipful master. And then perhaps arguably one of the most important parts of that Venn diagram are the charities themselves in Oxfordshire, and spending a lot of time trying to get to know as many charities as I possibly physically can, and trying to understand where they're heading. What do they want to achieve? Because everybody wants money to support their activities, but it's also about, well, what are they going to do with the money, and where's their path? So I guess, you know, a big part of the role is linking in with either one or more of those subsets of people. And then on top of that, I decided when I took over as provincial charity steward to start running some training workshops for lodge charity stewards, or frankly anybody that was interested in charity. So in my first year I ran three, in my second year I ran two, because it just seemed that we were perhaps overkilling with three. And in this third year, I was due to do one, but unfortunately that got postponed because of the COVID situation. But we're going to run an annual workshop just to keep everybody fresh with what's happening in charity.
Brilliant.
The other things we do, we run the pantomime project for disadvantaged and disabled children every year in December. It's an amazing project, largely, and in fairness to him, especially run by Worshipful Brother Roger Hampshire. If you've not been to the pantomime and you just want to see it, come along. If you fancy dressing up in women's clothing and disrupting the traffic outside the theatre, please join the long waiting list, because we have an alarming number of brothers who really enjoy looking like a woman. I guess it's only once a year, but I never ask. Other things we do is we've got the Teddies for Loving Care scheme. That's providing a 9-inch or so bear to children as they go into hospital to soothe them and help them be more comfortable. And we're making some great progress with both the acute and the community hospitals in relaunching this scheme. And then other parts of the job for me are that, as well as the title of provincial charity steward, I've also got half the treasurer's job, in that I'm the treasurer for the Provincial Charity Fund, which is a registered charity known as the Oxfordshire Masonic Charity. I'm a trustee of that. I'm the treasurer for it. So this is where we try and raise money, we earn money at provincial level, because we've got an investment portfolio that's spinning off around about £60,000 to £70,000 of income every year. And I have the sometimes difficult, but often easy task of trying to give that money away. So as an accountant in business, I've decided to bring a little bit of a business-like approach to that, to make sure that the people that we are giving to, they're reputable, they're genuine, and they don't have to be charities. They can be charitable projects. You know, for example, a scout hut. We recently paid for the new floor in a scout hut. So it's not a charity, but it's a charitable project. And we help our individual Masons and their families as well, a bit like the MCF does. So the role is, in summary, the role is around, you know, being in touch with people, trying to help people understand charity, trying to encourage best practice, trying to support charitable endeavours, and occasionally playing Santa Claus by writing out some nice checks and making the donations.
Wow, it must be quite a rewarding role.
It's very often a rewarding role. It's not without its hard work. A lot of that hard work goes on behind the scenes, so you don't necessarily see everything that's going on as a provincial charity steward. If I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't be accepting the Provincial Grandmaster's kind invitation to stay on each year.
Andrew, you mentioned festival. Obviously, Oxfordshire is currently in festival. What is a festival, and what does it mean for your work?
Thanks. I think it's a slightly curiously named project, to be honest, and something that I think is potentially misleading. It's come up in discussion many, many times, but it is one of these things that this is what they call it, so this is what we continue to call it. The festival system has been around for decades. And I mentioned the MCF, our central charity in London, that over the years has had many former names or been split into different parts. For example, people may have heard of something called the Grand Charity or the Masonic Trust for Girls and Boys or the New Masonic Samaritan Fund, etc. And these were all legacy charities that were merged together. But the festival system was always there to help support one of those component parts. And now, with the MCF having merged, I think it was 3 years ago, 4 years ago, what the festival system does is it says to all provinces under the United Grand Lodge of England that once every 11 years, that province is going to help raise money for the MCF so that the MCF can make some really powerful donations to charities, not just in Oxfordshire, but national, regional, local charities, plus, of course, a massive amount of money going to Freemasons and their families. So the festival system is a way of provinces raising money for the MCF. And so you're always set an end date. And as I say, ours comes around every 11 years. It's 2022. So guess what? The next one's going to be 2033. And these fundraising periods usually start around about 5 to 6 years before your festival end date. So in our case, we started our festival fundraising in February 2017. And we're going to run that through to some point at 2022, where we will have a grand finale, a big bash, and really celebrate the wonderful amount of money that we will have raised for the MCF. And the idea, chaps, is that very much we should be trying to have fun through this period. And anybody that's seen anything that I've punted out in our internal communications or to the lodges, etc., I've always spelt the word fundraising with F-U-N in capital letters, because that's what the PGM, the festival chairman, and I want individuals and lodges to be doing. We'd love to see you having fun whilst raising money. So, yes, of course, it's great if an individual makes a donation, either as a lump sum or through a regular payment plan, what used to be known in the olden days as a covenant, but essentially a monthly direct debit. It's, yes, absolutely, we want people to be doing that. But we also want people, either in addition to that or instead of doing that, to come up with fun ways of raising some money and getting others involved. And so that's why it's a fundraising project with F-U-N in capital letters that hopefully builds up to a grand total of which the province can be proud.
And how can people get involved with the festival?
Well, there's two key ways. So we've got 2 years to go, and I can't deny that this lockdown period has been absolutely terrible for the festival. Our donations have pretty much dried up, and one can fully understand why. People are understandably looking after number one. But I hope when the lockdown finally eases and we get back to a full sense of Masonic normality, that we've got two ways of people helping to get involved. One is you've got 2 years to make a personal donation if you can afford it. And it is only if you can afford it. But we hope people will try and support, because we want them to feel they are part of something great that we're doing. So a personal donation as a one-off, or as I say, a payment plan now only over 2 years remaining, that would be fantastic if people can still do that. And the alternative way of getting involved is to think of something that's fun, exciting, that appeals to you and your friends at whatever age limit, age level, degree of enthusiasm, degree of athleticism that you want to do. You know, we've had one or two people have done some rather energetic things like climb Kilimanjaro, walk the Thames Coastal Path, the Jurassic Coast, the Three Peaks Challenge, the classic Snowdon, Scarfell, Ben Nevis. And, you know, I got pulled up by a chap in a lodge who said, I'm 82. How the hell do you expect me to climb Scarfell Pike? I said, I don't, sir. But he said, well, I can't get involved in the festival. I said, well, you could. What about opening your garden for a open day or a summer tea party or a car treasure hunt or a quiz night or a race night or anything that you're involved with? And he went, oh, I didn't realise that. So, you know, it's organising something with a like-minded group of people or as a lodge, something that suits you and works for you. And crucially, you can have some fun whilst having that bonus of raising some money for charity.
I think that's a really good, a really important point about having that diverse attitude towards, you know, the social events that we put on, because not everyone can do everything, like as you've already suggested. So it's really important that everybody gets involved in this, within the lodges, within the province, bring forward ideas, you know, groups of people coming together to come up with these ideas is really, I think, the way forward.
Well, I hope so. And that's certainly what I've tried to encourage. I mean, before the lockdown, and I was visiting roughly 15 to 20 lodge meetings a year, and generally speaking would take the floor as part of the Second Rising, which is where the provincial business is discussed, to try and encourage people to get involved. And as yes, I would love more people to take out a payment plan. Absolutely, I can't deny that. Of course I would. But also I want individuals and lodges to try and get behind us. And I hope that with this sort of pent-up frustration we've got with lockdown, that when we come out of it, there will be a renewed energy and effort to do things, to have fun, to get together, to do some social events. And maybe it's also sort of slightly inherent in me, in that how did I come to be a Freemason? Well, it's because I started going to social events surrounded by Freemasons. I had such a great time that I joined. So actually, maybe if lodges put their mind to it, and it's not just about Freemasons having fun together, it's Masons, it's their family, it's their friends, it's people in the community coming together, and there might be some great bonus spin-offs in that you get some more candidates for your lodges. And I think as we embrace the new normal, or the whatever the normal is going to be, we've just got to keep trying as many things. And if they work, great, do them again. If they don't work, okay, well, at least you've tried. And I'd much rather see people trying something than just sitting on the sidelines tutting because nothing's ever working.
Well, couldn't agree more.
Come on, please get involved. Give it a go. What have you got to lose?
So obviously you're now part of the Light Blues podcast because you're here this evening.
Thank you.
No problem at all. Thanks for coming. But how do you see the Light Blues Club assisting you in your role as charity steward?
Oh, Andy, I'd love to see the Light Blues getting involved in charity and helping me. Oxfordshire is regarded as a small province in terms of the UGLE classification because we're less than 2,000 members. However, it's still a physically big place. And I think there's a lot of things that we can do. May I just say, though, that I think the work that you guys are doing in terms of getting the Light Blues to be so successful, and I recently saw on Facebook that you're formalizing your structures and having more nominated officers because you are busy. I think it's brilliant, and congratulations for really raising the profile of the Light Blues. And thank you to everybody who's involved out there in the internet world for being involved in the Light Blues, because it's really a fabulous thing that's happening. How you can help me, I guess there's a few things. Let me just go back over the festival and say, could the Light Blues, wherever you're based in Oxfordshire, whether you're up in the north in Chipping Norton or down in Caversham or across in Tame or wherever, you know, how about an event in that captures your lodge or your lodge centre, bring a few lodges together, and get something going, and not just one thing, get several things going. It's back to that, the energetic event maybe, or the less energetic event, the more genteel approach, whatever it is that works for you in Woodstock or in Whitney or wherever you are, please lead from the front. Because I think a lot of these things, if somebody is seen to be doing it, others will follow. And that's perhaps where we've not managed to garner quite enough interest thus far. So be active in terms of organising things. That would be a fantastic thing that the Light Blues could do. And outside of the festival, and this is perhaps for supporting me personally, really, is, as I say, we've got fewer than 2,000 members, and therefore we're classed as small, but it's still a huge place, and I can't possibly know everything that's going on in all the communities. So, you know, you Light Blues, you may well know that there's a project, a charity, or as I say, a charitable project that needs some support, and that support may be financial, it might also be logistical, and I'm particularly interested in smaller charities because they don't have the PR and marketing clout that some of the big charities do. But they are doing some fabulous work. There is a reason why these charities are being set up and trying to help people in the community. So, you know, if you're a Light Blue sitting in, where should we say Henley, and you know of a charity that's doing some really fabulous work but could do with a bit of support, get to know them and then get that charity in touch with me, and let's go and have a chat with them, let's visit them, let's see what they're up to, and let's see if we can help them. So and there's also the sort of the post donation event. The Light Blues could help by going and visiting charities that have already had financial support, to see what kind of difference it's made and how those projects have evolved with time. So there's an awful lot of work that people could do. And one of these days, you know, somebody may well be provincial charity steward. So it could be very good training.
And you mentioned, Andrew, that sort of COVID's had a big impact on your role, and obviously everyone's life. How do you see things getting back to normal? Is there anything you think that's worked well during COVID that perhaps we should continue? And
well, certainly one of the things that's happened with COVID is that far from it being a quieter time for me, yes, of course, I've not been to any lodge meetings, but that's been taken up with a vast amount of contact work behind the scenes. And both UGLE and the MCF made some extra money available so that we could make some donations during this otherwise sort of void period. So we've done a lot with donating monies, particularly to some of our hospital charities, because they were the ones that seemed to be most visibly suffering from the pandemic. In terms of how things are going to go from here, it's really hard to predict. And I guess most of the listeners out there are fairly sick of people predicting something that's going to happen and then it doesn't. So I don't propose to add to the predictions of how I think it's going to develop. But I think the other part of your question was what's worked well and what hasn't. Was that right?
Yeah, that's right.
So I think what has worked well is that we're still in touch with each other. Zoom, Microsoft Teams or Google Hangouts or any of these things have become a fabulous tool that people may have been shy of a little bit to begin with, but now have fully embraced. And also it's enabled us to have perhaps more meetings than we might otherwise have without all the environmentally unfriendly travel costs and CO2 pollutions. So I'm certainly going to become a huge fan of Zoom going forward for particularly things like committee meetings. And indeed, I've held my own provincial charity meetings by Zoom very effectively, and everybody was delighted that they could crawl out of their armchair at 2:29 to get on the Zoom for 2:30, and then, you know, by 3:30 they were having tea and biscuits again. So Zoom and Teams has been a fabulous thing that long may it continue. What's not worked so well? I'm not aware of any particularly major thing that hasn't worked so well. We're just missing each other's contact, I believe, and I hope that we're not going to have a drop off in the number of new initiates coming through, or that frankly people have forgotten what it's like to be a Freemason and don't want to pay their subs anymore, so they resign. But you know, I'm not aware of any particularly large negative factor coming out of COVID thus far. I think generally people are pretty positive, they're hanging in there, and they're looking forward to getting back together.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think we've certainly found Zoom to be very, very powerful tool for the Light Blues in terms of being able to run things whilst we're all confined mostly to our homes. And obviously every lodge has a charity steward. What should they be doing at the moment? And is there anything they can be doing in order to prepare for when we get back?
Yeah, there are things that they perhaps can do. And certainly, you know, we've had the green light to resume Masonic activity in some shape or form. Clearly that's still not back to normal. But you know, fingers crossed it won't be too long before even that is widened and broadened, and we can do full ceremonies and full festive boards, etc., etc. So certainly with 2 years to go to the festival, I think this is a great time for charity stewards to be on top of which of their members are part of the festival. Who else could now, with 2 years left to go, who else could afford a couple of quid a week to tick over on a regular payment plan for a couple of years to allow them to qualify as a festival steward? So for a lodge charity steward, think about, you know, who within your membership could still help to support the festival. Also, what funds have you got in your coffers and as a lodge within your perhaps your relief chest or your lodge benevolent fund, wherever you choose to hold that money, and where are you going to donate that? Lodges haven't been able to meet, so therefore they haven't been able to pass resolutions as to where they're going to donate their charity funds. Once again, naturally I'm going to say that the festival will be a very worthwhile cause for lodges to donate some of their money, but there will also be other charities, of course, dear to individual lodges. So think about, you know, where are you going to give your money, and hopefully not just hang on to it, because that's not really why members have donated it in the first part. So I think charity stewards can now start to be active, keep in touch with their members. it's a little bit like doing an almoner's role, but I don't think the two have to be completely demarcated. It might be nice for some lodge members to hear from a lodge officer, for example. So there's maybe a couple of things they can do there. And also, you know, in conjunction with the Light Blues, what events can that lodge put on whenever we're back to normal that are going to be fun?
I'm really looking forward to getting together physically with everybody. So hopefully that won't be too much longer. But again, thanks for such an informative view of your role within the province and some background on how you got into Freemasonry.
You're very welcome. And I hope the listeners have enjoyed it and learned from it. And if anybody wants to know anything more about charity, I'm be delighted to hear from you via my email address, which is charity@oxfordshirefreemasons.org. My mobile number is in the yearbook, and or if anybody contacts either Matt or Andy and says, how do I get in touch with Andrew, by all means, just put people in touch with me. And you want to volunteer for anything, if we can get a Light Blues representative in each of the centres or whatever it is, and if I can have an apprentice charity steward who wants my job in a few years' time, I really will be very, very pleased. So thank you for the invitation. Thank you to you two for doing this marvellous podcast. And thank you to the Light Blues out there for really, really raising this game within our province and within UGLE. I think we're soon to be having one of the best Light Blues clubs in UGLE. So well done.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and just to echo what Andy said, it's been great to have you on the podcast, and hopefully everyone will get a lot out of listening to this and hearing about all the fantastic things that the charity steward gets up to around Oxfordshire.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this edition. If you did, please share and pass it on to your friends. Join Matt and Andy next time discussing all things Freemasonry here on the world-famous Oxfordshire Light Blues Podcast.
Oxfordshire Light Blues Podcast.